denied at 734, 1688, appellate versus District of Columbia. Mr. Hahn, your statement.
Mr. Hahn?
Good morning, and may it please the court. Jeff Hahn for the court-appointed amicus curiae on behalf of the appellant, Ms. Tate. The Fifth Amendment prohibits the government from taking private property for public use without providing just compensation. There is no question in this case that the District of Columbia sold Ms. Tate's car as an abandoned vehicle, that it did so for the public purpose of promoting traffic and vehicle safety and funding its abandoned vehicles division, and it failed to compensate Ms. Tate for the sale.
That's the same as public use, taking property for public use.
That's correct, Your Honor.
And what's your best case on that?
Well, the public use provision of the takings clause has been held by the Supreme Court to be coterminous with the police power. So to the extent the government acts under the police power, it is, by definition, an action taken for public use. And I would also suggest that...
I mean, they weren't going to use her car.
That's correct, but the car...
I wanted to get a case that applies to this fact situation, that this is a taking.
Well, first of all, the car was sold at auction. The proceeds of the auction were applied to the abandoned junk vehicles fund. That certainly is not a private use. The Supreme Court's decision in Bennis, while it didn't directly address the public use clause necessarily, the car was forfeited in that case. The court never said that the problem there, the reason why there is no taking, was because the car was not put to a public use by some particular public use by the government. That was not an impediment in that case. So I don't think the public use clause is a problem here. I certainly don't think
public use is taking a private car in order to gain the sale value for a DC fund.
Well, I think that could be a public use. I think given
isn't that your argument?
Yes, it is part of our argument.
Do you have any other argument
for why it is that this is a taking?
Yeah.
Well, because it clearly was her private property. It was taken for a public use. It was not taken for a private use. She was not given any compensation for it. Now, certainly facial takings like this one may not be takings if some principle applies to prevent it from becoming a taking, such as if the district in this case had lawfully acquired Ms. Tate's car as an abandoned vehicle, it would not have been her property. And the district court relied on that principle for its takings holding. It said that under the Supreme Court's decision in the Bennis case, that the reason why there was no taking here was because the District of Columbia had lawfully acquired Ms. Tate's car as an abandoned vehicle. But of course, for it to have acquired the car as an abandoned vehicle, the car would have had to have been an abandoned vehicle. And the record, I think, demonstrates that at the very least, there's a dispute of fact as to whether or not it was an abandoned vehicle, because the District of Columbia's statute at the time defined abandoned vehicle as one that had remained unclaimed for 45 days after proper notice. And the record, I think, shows that there is a dispute of fact as to whether this 45-day period was met here. The district concedes that its notice to Ms. Tate never reached her because it was sent to the wrong address. It then speculates that Ms. Tate would have received actual notice 46 days before the auction when she went to visit the tow lot, but the district court explicitly rejected that as speculation beyond the province of summary judgment. Yet nonetheless, it went on to find that the car had been lawfully acquired by the district. And I think the contrast with the Bennis case is telling, because in the Bennis case, the car had been lawfully forfeited under the Michigan's forfeiture statute. There was no problem there. There was no innocent owner defense under the forfeiture statute. Here, by contrast, this car did not meet the criteria for abandonment, and therefore there was no ownership interest that passed to the District of Columbia. I'd like also to point out, too, on the public use point, that not only has the court said that the public use clause is coterminous with the police power, but has indeed found on a number of occasions, in fact, most of the regulatory takings cases that the court are police power cases, where the court has found that a police power regulation can affect a taking.
I think the step you have to still cover, and maybe you have, is whether there's a public use then in this particular case, whether this exercise of the police power, if this is a taking, is then justified, is then resulting in a public use.
Yes, well, like I said, Your Honor, I think the public use clause.
Fairly strange public use. It doesn't mean it's not correct, but it would.
No, I understand. I understand the court's concern that typically public use cases are more classical public uses for the public or to, you know, protect the public at large or whatnot. But the court's jurisprudence on the public use clause, when whether or not that prevents a taking, typically comes down to whether or not it was in fact for a private use. So, like the Kelo case, and the court and the plaintiffs in that case say, well, there was no public use, and therefore there was no taking at all, and therefore the government couldn't have taken this action at all. And in this case, we're saying that there clearly is. It's certainly not a private use. That's the point. I'd like also to, unless the court has a question, I'd like to address another point raised by the district, which is that, and this was not raised by the district court, which is that because Ms. Tate's takings claim is premised on, not premised on, I'm sorry, because Ms. Tate has accused the district of selling her car in contravention of its abandoned vehicle statute, that her takings claim is foreclosed by this notion articulated by the Supreme Court in the Lingle case, that the takings clause presupposes valid government action. And the district says that because Ms. Tate is saying that the district acted wrongly, that there can be no taking. Now, I just want to make clear that the Lingle case does not disturb Ms. Tate's takings claim in this case, because the first point is that the Lingle case, the facts and holding of that case are simply not germane here. And in fact, if anything, they assist Ms. Tate. Lingle was concerned solely with a specific question of whether a regulatory takings claim can be based only on the fact that a regulation in question does not substantially advance a government interest, irrespective of whether the regulation affects a physical or deprivation of property. The court held that the takings clause is concerned only with deprivation of property and is not concerned with the character of the action. And in this case, Ms. Tate's takings claim facially is premised squarely on the deprivation of property of her car.
She also assert a Fourth Amendment seizure claim?
That's correct, sir.
Something here more akin to a Bivens or 1983 action, right?
That's right. That's right.
Isn't that more likely what happened here, a seizure, without looking to what was done with the vehicle after it was seized? Isn't it more like a seizure than a taking?
Well, there certainly was a seizure.
The way you're arguing seems to be there would be a taking every time there's an execution of a search warrant.
Well, no, Your Honor. Ms. Tate has advocated this Fourth Amendment claim. Assuming for the sake of argument that we're not saying at all that the seizure was improper. The government may have lawfully acquired the car pursuant to its statute that it could tow cars and seize cars with two outstanding tickets. That's not an issue here. What they did, though, was separate from the seizure. They then sold the car pursuant to entirely.
That perhaps there's more than one step of seizure here. Perhaps booting is a seizure because it's a partial deprivation of possessory rights. Towing is a seizure because it's a complete deprivation of possessory rights.
Mm-hmm.
And then perhaps the sale is a third seizure of all property right in the vehicle.
That may be, but I think that even if the sale were to be characterized as a seizure, it is still a deprivation of property that squarely fits within the takings clause. So I'm not sure if the fact that it could be characterized as a seizure precludes a takings finding. And I'd like also to just make the point that Lingle was suggesting the kinds of cases that Lingle was saying can't be brought as takings claims are those where the government has acted in pursuit of an invalid public purpose. And they gave us an example where the government does something so irrational as to violate due process. That is not the case here. We are not suggesting that the government acted in pursuit of an invalid purpose. It acted most likely in good faith under its well-established abandoned vehicle statute, thinking Ms. Tate's car was in fact abandoned. It simply made a mistake. That is not the kind of claim that Justice O'Connor in the Lingle case was saying had to have been brought under the due process clause. This is, when the government acts in good faith pursuant to a a valid statute and makes a mistake, it is not a due process situation that can't be remedied under the takings clause.
I thought what the chief judge might be getting at in part is that this is more like a Fourth Amendment issue. And she's challenging, not that she didn't owe the tickets, or at least two tickets, but that it was unreasonable for the city to tow her car and sell it when it was lawfully parked on the street.
That's correct, Your Honor, but I would urge the court to separate the seizure from the sale. The sale of the car was based on the abandoned vehicle statute, which is wholly unconnected to the seizure statute.
But it's a long stretch to make that sale of an abandoned vehicle into a taking for public use. That you were asked by Judge Rogers what your best case was that this is a public use when you're converting it to cash to be used for other cases. You didn't answer very directly to that. Do you have a case that has something like this held to be a public use?
Yeah, I can't give you a case right now where the court has directly addressed this point. But as I said, in Venice, it wasn't the court wasn't concerned by the public use clause. And we cited I understand it's a case that's not controlling here, but in the federal claims court, this Innovare case where the property was taken, it was actually a technology licensing agreement that the plaintiff alleged was taken, and that clearly was not, you know, if this is not a public use, that
they sell it at auction to use the money for other things and call it a public use. They didn't sell that license at auction and use the money for something else, did they?
I would just say that they clearly used the money for the sale of the car to fund their abandoned and junk vehicles division.
But I think what we're trying to say, the cases seem to draw a distinction. It's either private or it's a taking. All right. There can be for private use, there can be for public use, and then there can be for takings. And you've got to fit in this takings category.
Well, a property that's taken for a public use would be, by definition, a taking. Property is taken for.
That's my point. That's the way you're arguing the case.
That's right.
As the chief judge suggests, that means that anything taken in execution of a search warrant is a takings, a Fifth Amendment takings. And that's why I asked you for a case.
Well, I would say the distinction of the chief judge's hypothetical, the distinction would be, and akin to the Bennis case, is that if property is taken in pursuit of a valid search warrant, that is akin to essentially the government acquiring lawfully the property. There was a lawful acquisition, in effect, of the property in that case.
You said the district attained this lawfully. I mean, it put the boot on her car.
Well, the district seized the car lawfully.
Yeah. But
they did not sell the car lawfully.
All right.
And so the taking, I think, needs to be focused on the sale.
The reason the sale was unlawful was a lack of process. Is that correct?
That's correct, sir.
So why isn't this a due process 1983 case, if it's anything, as opposed to a taking case?
Well, I think
if they took it lawfully, if you're right about that, and they sold it in the same way they would under the statute in which they seized it, but there was a process failure, why isn't this a due process case respecting the Fourth Amendment rather than a compensation case respecting the Fifth Amendment?
Well, I think the critical distinction here is that the process in this case, the 45-day notice period, and the fact that the car had to remain unclaimed for that period of time, is relevant to the issue of property ownership. If that period had elapsed, and Ms. Tate did not claim her car for 45 days after notice, effectively ownership would have transferred to the District of Columbia. And under the Supreme Court's takings law, property rights, which is obviously an element of a takings claim, is clearly founded upon state law. State law fixes and determines property rights. And in this case, it just so happens that a state procedure is what the property interest in this case turns on. So it's a different case than it's different than a due process case where the plaintiff is saying the reason why my process rights were violated was because the state did not follow its procedure. She's simply saying that her car was taken for public use without just compensation, and the only relevance of the lack of the 45-day period being satisfied is to show that it was not actually lawfully acquired by the district and was not the district's property, but it was in fact her property.
Because the district didn't follow its procedure.
What's that, sir?
Because the district didn't follow its procedure.
That's correct. That's correct, yes.
I thought you said you're not arguing the district didn't follow its procedures.
We are not arguing that her claim, we're not saying that it's a takings claim because the district violated its procedure. We're saying it's a takings claim because the district sold her car. The fact that without compensation and for public use, the fact that it did not violate, that did not follow its procedure is relevant to rebut this notion that the district lawfully acquired her car and that it owned the car effectively when it sold it. Its failure to follow its procedure shows that it did not own the car when it sold it. It was Ms. Tate's car.
Thank you, counsel. We'll give you back a couple of minutes for rebuttal. We'll
Thank
hear
Your
from
Honor.
The appellee.
Good morning, Your Honor. Sonia Ignatova for the District of Columbia. May it please the court. The court should affirm under the Fifth Amendment's takings clause because there was no taking here for public use. And appropriations of private property for uses other than public use are properly analyzed under the due process clause. And the appellant was provided with sufficient process here.
And what's your best case?
Excuse me, Ann.
What is your best case?
Our best case is Bennis v. Michigan.
Counsel and says that's readily distinguishable.
Well.
And what's your response? That's all I'm asking.
We argue that Bennis is more similar to this case than the public use takings cases cited by amicus like Loretto and Lucas, because the procedure through which the car came into the district's custody and was ultimately sold is more akin to a forfeiture than it is to a taking for just compensation. And specifically, one thing that distinguishes this case from cases where the court has found takings for just compensation is the purposes served by the law here under which the car was sold. And the law does have some deterrent and punitive purposes, which are also.
All right, so let's talk about her Fourth Amendment claim for a moment.
Sure.
All right. Are there any regulations or policy or notice that says that if your car is booted for 2 weeks and it's on the street, it's going to be towed?
Yes.
Where can I find that?
That is actually district policy, and there are affidavits by three employees of the district in the record. These are sworn affidavits, and they state.
And where do they say that 2 weeks is the limit?
In the sworn affidavits, they state that there's a 15-day rule. So when one of the sworn affidavits is at A116, mm-hmm. and that's a declaration of Cassandra Clater. She's the DMV chief hearing examiner. Mm-hmm. And there is another declaration at A141 of Cynthia Jones, who is a manager of the abandoned vehicles operation. So both of these district employees.
And where does it say 2 weeks is the limit? Or you say 15 days?
I don't have the citation to the exact paragraph in the affidavits, but
I was looking for it, all right.
I just read it last night. It states that the district, due to storage concerns, cannot store a car.
No, that's once it gets to the impoundment lot. I'm talking about the car is lawfully parked on the street, but it's booted. And it's been booted for 2 weeks.
So, at the point when the car is booted,
let me be clear. The district court says, well, this is the community caretaking function. All right. It's been booted for 2 weeks. City can move it.
Right.
But the community caretaking function talks about it's impeding traffic, or it's become an attractive nuisance for vandals, or things like that. I didn't see any of that in these affidavits.
No, that is not in the affidavits. I misunderstood, Your Honor.
So where a car is lawfully parked but booted, why is it reasonable for the city to tow your car?
Well, after the car has been booted, it is booted for a violation. So if the car is parked on the street for 2 weeks, that's not legal parking anymore.
Suppose I have a broken headlight. Both of my headlights are broken, but the car is lawfully parked. City can tow it?
Well, yes, the district is allowed to, well, not just for two broken headlights, but for two or more outstanding or unsettled tickets. So there is a difference. This car.
But if the car is lawfully parked, where does the community caretaking function fit?
Oh, we didn't argue that the community caretaking function is why the district was allowed to.
I know. You just said the district wants to enforce its parking laws.
Right. And so.
And that's enough? So the district could tow it 10 minutes after it's booted, could tow it 2 days after it's booted.
Yes, because the same statute, the 5022.0103K1, which allows booting, it does not distinguish between booting and towing. As long as a car has two or more outstanding violations.
So it is per se reasonable for the district to tow your car once you have two tickets?
Once you have two tickets that you have failed to answer during the 30 days that the district has given for answering those tickets. And at the time when this particular car was towed, as well as when it was booted, there were five tickets, three of which were over 60 days overdue, and two of them were 30 days overdue. So there is, I mean, the 30-day.
So the reasonable inquiry under the Fourth Amendment disappears.
Well, the inquiry becomes whether it was reasonable in this case, in the sense, did the district follow its policy? And yes, it doesn't go into, or it shouldn't go into, the reasonableness of the law, because it is a call that the legislature has made of when a car can be booted. And in the district, car owners have 30 days to answer their tickets.
So under your theory, if you have two outstanding tickets, the district can tow your car?
If you have two outstanding tickets more than 30 days old, yes, that is per.
You can tow your car?
Yes.
And the 45 days starts running?
And yes. Once the car is taken to the impound lot. And here the car had, as I mentioned.
Not all the circuits agree with you on this, you know. And do you want to explain why that is? In other words, there are lots of laws on the books.
Mm-hmm.
All right. And it doesn't mean that necessarily when your property is seized, it's reasonable under the Fourth Amendment.
A statute providing for seizure is not per se constitutional.
Correct.
It's not. Seizing under a statute does not necessarily mean the seizure is constitutional, does it?
Right. I think it's just, in this case, the statute which allows the seizure is something that the DC Council has decided in terms of, okay, they'll set it at two tickets that are over 30 days past. And I think this particular case shows why that rule is not only reasonable, but it's in fact probably the only feasible way to enforce the traffic laws. Miss Tate's car was parked on the street for 2 weeks with the boot on it, towed, then kept at the district's impound lots for 2 months, and even after the car had been sold, Ms. Tate still had an outstanding ticket, as she states in her brief. So this, I think, illustrates how difficult it is for the district to enforce its parking laws. And really, what incentive could it provide to...
So any car that's on the street has two tickets. City can just tow them. And it's a reasonable taking, reasonable seizure under the Fourth Amendment. That's your argument.
Correct. And then the owner, of course, gets...
particular circumstances have no role to play.
Circumstances might have a role to play generally, but here there is no circumstance that has been mentioned. And in fact, when...
Well, she says, you know, she contested these tickets. Her car was lawfully parked in her neighborhood. It wasn't providing any disruption to the traffic in the neighborhood or anything like that.
At the time she contested her first ticket on March 14th, or rather when she had her first hearing on the January 29th ticket, which was overdue at that point, her reason for not having paid attention to the ticket was that she had been busy with other things.
Yep.
Right.
So
how many tickets did she have at that point?
So it's just very hard for the district to enforce its laws, and it's hard to think of other ways to give incentive.
Can I jump you to the Fourth Amendment claim? If we're, she was entitled to 45 days notice before the sale, right?
Yes.
She didn't have it, did she?
She did not have, the written notice was returned
right.
to the district because there was a typo in the letter, but the statute nowhere says that notice, nowhere defines proper notice, and it's our argument that Ms. Tate, in fact...
The statute has to mean something when it provides 45 days notice. What is, and you sent the notice, sent to the wrong address, she didn't get it. That ought to be a fairly simple question for you to answer. She didn't get it, the 45 days notice, right?
Correct, the mailed notice.
Now, I grant you she got some sort of actual notice at some time later.
Yes.
Does that render the sale of the automobile without due process of law, where she's not had the process that the ordinance provided for?
It does not, Your Honor.
Why not?
Because the district provided this written notice, which unfortunately was mailed back. Then the following day, April 13th, there was also a publication in the newspaper. And then a week later, on April 19th, which is 46 days before the sale, appellant visited the impound lot where her car was held and removed the suitcase from the car. And on that day, earlier on that day, she was visiting the DMV to contest another ticket, which had appeared suddenly on her DMV record. And at that time, she was given a printout of her DMV record, which had the word auction on it.
Okay.
So this is someone who immediately notices when a new... The date of the auction was not on the record. But I think we should consider all the circumstances here. Ms. Tate, in the past, has been a frequent visitor to the DMV. She has had over 80 tickets. During her 3 years of ownership of the car, her car has been booted twice. She had used...
It had never been to an impoundment lot, had it?
It had been... So it hadn't been to an impoundment lot.
It had not been impounded before?
No.
This was the first impoundment.
So the question is, how did she get the notice?
Yeah.
That's the question.
So the...
And the best you have in the record is the affidavit that says if she visited Blue Plains, she would have been told. Not that
yes,
she
this,
was told.
She was, but...
That is how the affidavit is worded, yes. But appellant has also not provided any evidence that she was not given notice on that day. her claim is only in her unverified complaint. She could have written a sworn statement that she was not provided notice, so she did not meet her burden under Rule 56E to provide evidence that she did not receive notice. And I think what we have in the record strongly suggests that she did have actual notice at least 46 days before the sale of the car. In addition...
And that's because she had that hearing?
The hearing...
Saying she had actual notice 46 days before the auction?
Correct.
Even though she didn't know the date of the auction?
Correct. She does not say, we basically don't know from the record whether she knew the date of the auction. When she visited the lot, the date of the auction had already been set. So it is highly unlikely that she visited the lot, presented her...
That's a Rule 56 standard?
Well, the 56E standard is that the district point, the moving party points out that there's a lack of evidence on a particular point, and then the burden shifts to appellant to present evidence of that fact. And here we only have an allegation in an unverified complaint. In addition, the 45-day rule is a rule of local law, due process.
Point out it's a pro se complaint.
Yes, but I think...
You do not know about Rule 56E.
I think based on the law in this circuit...
it would be easy enough for the city when it gives these printouts to say, and auctions are held on the first and third Tuesday of every month. So, reclaim your car before then or something.
Correct. But also, appellant, I think, has shown skill and knowledge of the law in all her filings, so she's not the typical pro se litigant. She has also been very good at going to the DMV and asserting her rights and requesting hearings, even if only to admit the violation and to get a waiver of the penalty. In addition, I would like to point out again that the 45-day note is a statutory requirement, and due process requires an opportunity to be heard at a meaningful time. And here, appellant was provided with a hearing before the car was sold, and she did have an opportunity to voice her concerns and to be heard on this point, and was in fact told to go and pay her tickets.
But we've said lots of times, this court and others, that due process is process that's due under the circumstances. When the district has established that under this circumstance, process includes 45-day notice, did she have the process that was due under this circumstance?
It's our argument that she did receive actual notice more than the 45 days, yes.
Well, unless my colleagues have further questions, I think we've taken you well beyond your time, as is our habit. So thank you, counsel.
Thank you.
We'll, amicus was over time, but we'll give you back 2 minutes for rebuttal, counsel.
I just want to make two brief points. First of all, on the notion that Ms. Tate received actual notice 46 days before the auction when she visited the lot, this is, of course, a factual issue. And the district court, I would point you to page 823 of the appendix at footnote 5, said specifically the defendant surmises that the plaintiff would have been informed of the auction when she visited the lot on April 19th. The plaintiff disputes that she was so informed. While arguably the plaintiff's own exhibit indicates that the car was subject to auction and suggests perhaps inquiry notice, this disputed fact is a credibility question beyond the province of summary judgment. So it's clear from the court's opinion that this was not a fact that he found, and that certainly it was not undisputed that she received this notice 46 days in advance. I also want to touch briefly on the district court also held that Ms. Tate had waived all of her common law claims by failing to address them in her opposition brief, and it cited to the notice that it sent to her, instructing her of her response obligations. That notice told Ms. Tate only to file a response or else she, or opposition, or else the motion would be conceded. Ms. Tate clearly filed a response, albeit I would concede she did not address specifically every issue raised by the district, but she certainly filed a response. And I think more to the point is that she clearly put in issue facts that were, the district believed, were material facts and undisputed facts to its motion on her common law claims, most notably this idea that she had received actual notice and therefore that the district had lawfully acquired her car. So given that, given her pro se status, given that she put in issue facts central to the district's arguments on her common law claims, I think it's simply improper for the court to have found that she waived those claims.
Thank you, counsel.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Again, as in the first case, we thank our appointed amicus for their service to the court and the United States. I've had an inordinate number of cases involving counsel who are pro bono so far this short term, and seems to be a high prevalence of one law firm, so I thank not only you, counsel, and the other Miller and Chevalier lawyer who was here in the first case, but also the firm for its work this term and its public service. Thanks again. Counsel.